From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. For 14 years, the nonprofit Thread has identified Baltimore students facing academic and personal challenges and created a tapestry of support around each, powered by hundreds of volunteers who stay by their side for years. Many Thread students have spent their lives being told they're underperformers or not worthwhile. The commitment of consistent and unconditional acceptance can turn lives around. We meet longtime volunteer Tony Polin and Thread co-founder and CEO Sarah Heminger.
Then to have someone come and say, no, actually, not only do you matter, but I need your help, it starts to impact how you see your own identity that then changes how you make decisions.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. It takes a village to raise a child is a well-known adage. What does that entail in reality? Since 2004, Thread, a nonprofit in Baltimore, has interpreted the saying quite literally. They identify students facing academic and personal challenges and weave a tapestry of support around each in order to help them turn their lives around. It's powered by volunteers numbering in the thousands, and the support for the teenagers continues for years. We're revisiting a conversation we had last fall with Thread's co-founder and CEO, Sarah Heminger. First, she explained how Thread identifies the students they work with.
So the way that we decided how we would identify students who would be part of Thread is it's based on my husband's story. When he was in junior high school, his mom was in a really bad car accident. And because of that, she was unable to work. She ended up losing her job, losing their home. They moved from suburban Indianapolis into the inner city, into public housing. She became very depressed and addicted to Dilaudid. To support her habit, she began dealing drugs, not just using drugs. And so he basically went from what was essentially cornfields in Indiana to the equivalent of a crack house in a matter of 18 months. And that time period coincided with his transition into high school. And so his freshman year of high school, he failed his classes. He missed more than 30 days of school, and he was at risk of dropping out. But there was this group of teachers who were like, we are not going to let this happen. So they would give him rides to school, and they would make sure he had food to eat, and they would help keep the electricity on. And so it's a lot easier to go to school if you're not hungry. It's a lot easier to go to school if you don't have to take three buses because you have a ride. And it's a lot easier to go to school if you have clean clothing that's been washed and you're not worried about being teased. And so he went from basically straight Fs to becoming a straight A student and eventually went to the United States Naval Academy. And so when we thought about who we would enroll in Thread, it was coming from a place of understanding that no human being is a lost cause, and that if Ryan could go to the Naval Academy, everybody could go to the Naval Academy. It's just that oftentimes there are young people who are distracted by things happening outside of the classroom. And so in Thread, we enroll students who, like Ryan, rank in the bottom 25% of their class during their freshman year. So the average GPA of our cohorts is around 0.9 on a 4.0 scale. And they're generally facing challenges outside of school. And then once they're in Thread, they stay with us for a decade, so the rest of high school and 6 years after. And the most important thing is we never give up on a young person, that once you're in Thread, it sticks. We're family.
And you build that family, the same kind of support that your husband got when he needed it. You build that kind of volunteer support around
these
kids. Exactly.
Exactly. So once students are enrolled, each young person is building relationships with up to four adults. And those four adults are not there to replace their family. They're there to become an extended family and to integrate into the existing family and community and network of the young person. And the intention is that the relationships are to be two-way. So you know, initially you might have a volunteer who is showing up to give a young person a ride to school, but just like our family relationships evolve over time, the relationships of Thread evolve over time. So once you have a young person in the car on the way to school, anyone who's ever spent time with a teenager knows the best way to get them talking is to trap them in a car. And what happens is it not only becomes sharing on the part of the student, but the volunteer. It's those are the moments, the rides to school, the showing up to have lunches, the hanging out after school, where they get to know one another in a very mutually beneficial way.
Which schools do you work with?
Our four high school sites are Digital Harbor High School, Dunbar High School, ACE, which is the Academy for College and Career Exploration, and Frederick Douglass High School.
What are some of the other ways volunteers interact with students?
The best way to think about it is to go through the mental Rolodex of what you would do with your own child or your niece or your nephew. Those are essentially the limits of what we do with our children. So it could be helping them with their college applications or introducing them to someone who might lead to them obtaining a summer job. Or it might just be going out for sushi for the first time or talking about a breakup with someone. But the same is true in the other direction. So it's often the young person who's talking to the volunteer about their breakup or their troubles at work or their challenges in their college classes. It's a two-way street of really getting to know and understand one another.
What if a teenager says, okay, this isn't for me, forget it. I want out. I'm dropping out.
I'm almost sure that every single student who's ever joined Thread at some point said they were dropping out. I think that's just par for the course. The key is,
what if they're right? What if they're like, this is suffocating. This is like too much attention. I'm a loner. This is not what I want.
You know, I think it is very rare in life that you experience unconditional love. And what happens in Thread, I think from the perspective of a young person, is that you have these random adults just showing up and showing up and showing up and showing up. And at first it's annoying. You just want, like, literally kids run away. But then you get a little curious, like, why does this person keep showing up? Who's paying them? What's their agenda? What do they really want from me? And when they come to find out that all they really want is to be in their life, that's the breaking point. And I think key to that is it's not just about the volunteers showing up, it's how they show up. So are they vulnerable? Are they willing to share with the young person some of the things that they're going through? The most profound car rides aren't talking about how you did on your math homework. It's actually sharing your life stories and really beginning to understand one another. In fact, we found that the key to our young people succeeding is a very, very simple thing, which is, does the adult invite the young person to help them? That is the thing that causes a young person to start to see themselves differently. Because oftentimes, our young people have been told that they are less than, or that, they're underperformers, they're this, they're that, very negative view of themselves. And so then to have someone come and say, no, actually, not only do you matter, but I need your help, it starts to impact how you see your own identity in a very important way that then changes how you make decisions.
That's Sarah Heminger, co-founder and CEO of Thread, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Thread is a nonprofit that creates communities of long-term support around vulnerable teenagers. So Thread's beginning the second year of an ambitious 3-year strategic plan. How's that going?
So a few years ago, we were given the opportunity to expand outside of Baltimore. And this was a pivotal point in our trajectory, in that the realization came that we thought it was possible, just from running the numbers, to eventually reach 8,000 volunteers. So why does that matter?
How many do you have now?
We have about 1,000 volunteers and collaborators currently. And so when we realized we could reach 8,000 volunteers, it led to this understanding that we could eventually get to scale of serving 3,000 students in Baltimore City, meaning enrolling 300 freshmen every year, which amounts to approximately 5 to 7% of the entire freshman class across the school district. So the first thing that's important about that is that in Baltimore City, students who during their freshman year have GPAs of less than 1.0, only 6% graduate from high school in 4 years. In Thread, that number is 65%, and if you extend out to 6 years, it's 87%. So if we could get to scale of serving not just 5 to 7% of every freshman class, but the most academically underachieving students, the students most at risk of dropping out, we could potentially materially shift the high school graduation rate citywide. But that isn't what actually gets all of us up every day. What gets us up every day and excited is that if we get to that scale, we'd have 3,000 students, 8,000 volunteers, collaborators, donors, staff, board members, the adult counterparts in the household. We'd actually be a community of about 20,000 people in Baltimore, which then represents 5% of the entire adult population in the city. And so when you think about a broader movement, if you think about what was originally intended in the civil rights movement, it was to bring about an equitable society where it was truly integrated. But that's not at all what we have today. In many ways, we're more divided than ever before. And so we feel like the reason for going deep in Baltimore is we think Baltimore is uniquely positioned to really be the place in our country where we realize what was originally intended in the civil rights movement, where people come together across lines of race and class. And that's what we're day in and day out working to do, is to build those relationships between our young people and our volunteers and our collaborators in a way that changes everyone's lives, but also changes their view of what our city can be.
Is this what you were hoping for when you started Thread, or is this bigger than you thought you could?
When we started Thread, I didn't even know what a nonprofit was. I had no vision whatsoever for anything of this magnitude. When I started Thread, I was a lonely graduate student who had very few friends, no family in the area other than my husband. And in my mind, it made sense that there must be other students in high school that were like my husband, who were super brilliant, capable, just distracted by things happening outside of school. And the thought that crossed my mind was they were my best chance at finding friends. So it was a very selfish thing starting Thread, that I wanted to be part of a community and I wanted to get to know young people. And so what's happened is the vision has evolved because it's been driven by the young people. It is each step of the way that our model has evolved, has been a response to their driving where we're going. So for example, even now, if you look at our cohort of students who was enrolled in 2004, they're now 28, 29 years old. They're older than I was when we started. And they're not only have graduated from high school and college and are having families, they're my close friends. They're the people in my social circle. They are, they're the staff members at Thread. It's come full circle in such a deep way where they drove the decision-making early and they've driven it each step of the way. But there was never a grand vision. It's just been one step at a time in trying to do what makes sense to create a society where our young people truly can thrive, where everyone is given the same opportunity to thrive.
So what do you need in terms of people and money and technology to make that growth that you're looking at, the growth of Thread?
The most important thing that we need is individuals who want to be part of a community where people are vulnerable and where people do support one another and where there's an understanding that we're going to grow together. We talk about calling a thing a thing. So it's a very direct culture, but how do you be direct with kindness? It is showing all the way up, which might mean if you're an introvert, speaking up when it's uncomfortable. If you're someone who's more extroverted, it's hanging back and letting someone else speak. So it's creating a culture where our community acknowledges and sees everyone, right? So it's the people. It's people who are willing to go on this journey. And this journey is messy and hard. What has to happen is people have to get to know one another and start to believe in their deepest self that my success is inextricably linked to your success. And I think we've lost this sense of community where we understand the connection that each of our lives has to one another. And that's what Thread is building.
We have to take a quick break here. Sarah Heminger, CEO of Thread, she co-founded this nonprofit that creates extensive volunteer communities around vulnerable teens to provide long-term support. After a short break on the record, Sarah's going to stay with us and we'll meet a longtime Thread volunteer. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Today, we're revisiting a conversation from last fall about Thread, a nonprofit that works with teenagers facing academic and personal challenges. Thread creates a large network of volunteers, like a family, to provide them support. Earlier, we spoke with Thread CEO and co-founder Sarah Heminger. We continue the discussion with Thread volunteer Tony Polin. Polin is also an associate professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine. To start, she told us how she first heard about Thread.
I was sitting on a bus, on a circulator bus, and I was sort of playing with my phone or doing email on my phone, and a boy, he was probably about 12, just kind of ran up and grabbed the phone out of my hands. When that happened, I have this just really clear memory of the air changing.
The air changing.
All of a sudden, I wasn't sort of happy-go-lucky. And I felt, even though, you know, it was a small crime compared to all the things that could have happened, but I felt that same violation, you know. My peace was violated. So the kid ran off of the bus with the phone, and a man saw him and chased him. The man brought this little boy back, and he said, is this, you know, is this the person who took your phone? And I think it was, but he didn't have the phone anymore. And the man kind of handed this kid over to me, and I'm holding his hand, and we're waiting for the police to come. And I'm just kind of holding his hand, and so much is going through my head. But part of I'm thinking kind of, well, I was like, you know, what's going to happen to him? So the police will come. Will he go to prison? He's a kid. And I also kind of felt like, well, I'm holding the hand of this kid that I don't know. Maybe I'll get in trouble. But in any case, I let go of him. But I'm standing there very upset and frustrated. I had my personal property stolen. And I was, you know, I was angry. I was scared. I was upset. But I only started to cry when I started thinking about this kid, and thinking that this kid woke up that day and that was the best choice he felt he could make. It didn't even matter if he, you know, needed the money or if he was just having fun, but that was what he had chosen to do. And that was never, especially as a 12-year-old, that was never a choice that would have even occurred to me. And I realized that was the world he lived in. He lived in this world where that was the best choice he could make.
So how did that lead you to Thread?
Because at the time it happened, and the time I was crying and upset that this was the best choice this kid could make, I it was definitely a coping mechanism for me. You know, I felt so out of, you know, that something had happened out of my control. So I want to fix it. I want to make the world better. But then I said, well, that's ridiculous. You know, I'm having this whole conversation with myself. I said, that's ridiculous. You know, you're working full time, you're too busy, and you can't fix it all yourself anyway. But I just was continuing to think about this, and I started reading about the school where it happened on the internet. And I came upon this story, I think it was in Wikipedia, about this woman named Sarah Heminger, who had been feeling lonely and isolated in graduate school and started this organization to reach out to kids. And what really struck me was the way that they were building families. And I thought, well, two things about that. One, you don't have to do this alone. You're with a bunch of people who all want want to do something to somehow make the world better. And then the other thing is that you have people to talk to. It made it very clear, this article made it very clear that you meet every week. So you talk to people, you're doing this together. And so I had one of those rare moments where I just knew that I was going to be part of this organization.
And that was about 4 years ago.
That was a little bit over 4 years ago.
What does your typical week look like as a volunteer?
It looks really kind of like living my life at this point, but I have these family members, so it can kind of vary. But very often I will, sometimes I'll go out to dinner with the people from my family, the people who started out, young adults who started out as students, and other volunteers. A lot of texting, talking on the phone. Sometimes, you know, we have to go to the college to see an advisor to register for classes. Sometimes it's, you know, my going over, you know, to his house and, you know, visiting with his family a little bit, talking with his family about how things are going. So it really just kind of looks like regular life, only richer.
Sarah, what are the requirements for volunteers?
Well, we ask that the volunteers commit to building a relationship over the course of 1 year.
They're not making the 10-year commitment that you're asking of the students?
Not initially, but what we've seen is that as the relationship grows in strength, we have had volunteers that have stayed the full 10 years. And a lot of the relationships have actually extended beyond geography, too. So we have a student alumni who just recently went out to California to visit a volunteer alumni. So neither of them are formally in THREAD any longer, but they still, that relationship transcends any institution or organization because they're family.
Is there a recommended number of hours a volunteer puts in order to create a bond with a student?
Yeah, so if you think about in any relationship, you actually need to spend time together in order to build it. So we ask that volunteers and students have what we call a touch point, so at least one touch point per week. That touch point can be determined by them. So it could be a ride to school. It could be working on homework after school. It could be the young person helping the volunteer move. Who knows? Like, it could be
It's more
anything.
Than a phone call. It's more than a
It's
text.
More than a phone call, yes. And then we also initially, when the relationships are first being formed, we do things like we go camping. So what we found is that overnight experiences where all of us are forced to face our fears in different dimensions is really the best way to build relationships.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Sarah Heminger, the co-founder and CEO of THREAD, a nonprofit that creates networks of volunteers around vulnerable teenagers to provide long-term support. Also with us is Tony Pollan, a THREAD volunteer. Sarah, with hundreds of teens, thousands of volunteers taking part, how do you know everyone is getting what they need? How do you keep track?
We can predict whether or not a young person is going to graduate from high school based on the number of touch points that they have with a volunteer in a given month. Because touch points are a surrogate measure for the relationship. And if the relationship is strong, what we found is that is what drives strong student outcomes. And interestingly, we can actually predict whether or not a volunteer is going to have that touch point based on, so you have four adults in a THREAD family, but that THREAD family is managed by what's called a head of family. The head of family is also a volunteer. The job of the head of family is not to work with the young person. It's to actually coach the adults on their own journey. So when the adults are running into challenges in their own lives, it's for them to have a life coach, both in terms of how to do things in THREAD, but just to have a coach for how to do things in life. And so we can predict whether or not a volunteer is going to actually have that touch point with a young person based on, did the head of family have a touch point with them? And so now what we track throughout all of the THREAD community is touch points, because we use them as a measure for the health of relationships to help direct our energy where we might need to support relationships becoming stronger.
How do volunteers communicate these touch points?
So touch points are logged on our mobile app, so they're able to log in real time touch points, and they can see what touch points they've had, as well as what touch points other people in the Thread family have had. So it's a means to facilitate the relationships amongst the volunteers as well as with the young people in Thread.
Tony, as a university professor, you must have a really busy schedule. Mm-hmm. What would you tell someone who thinks they don't have time for a commitment like this?
I just can't emphasize enough that you're not doing it alone, because I think that's what people are kind of used to thinking about, these, you know, sort of a, like the just kind of a one-on-one relationship and that's it. And that can be a problem, because if you don't show up for the person, then that could do more damage. But I would say that it's you are becoming part of a family and also part of a movement. And the more that you have going on, the more you can make this successful. You know, I was going to a health fair that was part of my work, and they would come with me. He would come with me. And from that, like, helped me with, you know, with handing out brochures and stuff, and also just learned a tremendous amount about what kind of health awareness is going on in the community. So that's what I would say. Yes, like, we're busy, and maybe you only have, you know, a couple hours a week, but in the end, it stops being about how much time you have, and it becomes being about being part of a family and being part of a community that you help, and it helps you.
It really is exciting. Thank you both for telling us about it. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sarah Heminger co-founded Thread, a nonprofit that creates networks of volunteers around vulnerable teenagers to provide long-term support. She is Thread's CEO. Tony Polan, associate professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, is a Thread volunteer. We have a link to more information about Thread at the On the Record page, wipr.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.